tonight we'll study the Meshech Chachma for Parshas Vayeshev. The first few pieces address the relationship between Yosef and his brothers. And of course, as you know, the Torah testifies that they hated Yosef. And the pasuk goes as follows. This is in Perek Lamed Zayin, pasuk Dalet. Vayiru echav ki oso ahav aviyem mikol echav vayisnu oso. When the brothers became aware of the fact that Yaakov chose Yosef and loved Yosef, mikol echav. Now whenever you see the word kol, you know it's an inclusion. And then vayisnu oso, they hated him. So Be'er Simcha, in this very first paragraph, wants to address the word mikol echav. What does it mean? What's the emphasis here that Yaakov Avinu loved Yosef mikol echav? All. What's the ribui of all?
From all of them.
Right, all. What's the all? Why couldn't the Torah say that he loved Yosef mi'echav, from amongst the brothers? Why all the brothers? Is there one particular brother that's a chidush, that we would have thought for sure Yaakov would love that brother just as much as he would love Yosef, and yet the Torah goes out of his way to say, even in that case, even in that one particular brother...
So you mean even more than Binyamin?
Ah, Binyamin, excellent. So the answer is that the brothers thought that the love for Yosef on the part of Yaakov, because Yosef was the son of Rachel. Rachel was Yaakov Avinu's chosen beloved wife. Obviously he loved Leah as well, but he loved Rachel in a very special way. And when you love a woman in a special way, you love her children that are born to you and to her in a very special way. So the brothers, says the Meshech Chachma, could have lived with that. They could have tolerated that. In their minds, they could find some sort of justification for the special love of Yaakov for Yosef in the context of Yosef being the son of Rachel. And again, that maybe if it was only that, and Yaakov had a special love for the children of Rachel, they could have justified that. They could have lived with that. You know, you can't live with something that doesn't make sense to you. But if you could find some justification, some explanation, maybe you could tolerate such a thing. Kashero ki oso ahav mikol echav. But the pasuk goes out of its way to add the word kol echav. Hainu afilu mi binyamin. The ribui, the inclusion of kol, is to tell you that Yaakov had a love for Yosef in a very singular way, above and beyond his love for all the brothers, even for Binyamin. Then the brothers started asking themselves, why? What could be the justification for such a special love that goes above and beyond Binyamin? It can't be because Yosef is the son of Rachel. There must be some other explanation as to why Yaakov had this special love for Yosef. And the answer to that, which is alluded to in the pasuk, is it says vayisne'u oso, and it says, just one second, I just want to get the right pasuk here. It says vayavei Yosef es dibasam ra'ah el avihem. That if you recall, the Torah testifies to the fact that Yosef brought lashon hara about the brothers to Father Jacob. That's why
he did speak lashon hara.
Well, again, I'm just using the word dibarah. Dibarah could be translated as lashon hara. I'm not going into the question of whether it technically it is lashon hara. It's not. That's not our subject for tonight. Mm-hmm. But the Torah testifies that Yosef brought evil tidings about the brothers to Yaakov. Now you can spend a lifetime trying to figure out what they said, what Yosef exactly said, and was he justified in telling his father? That's not our issue tonight. But the issue is that they began to realize that the special love that Yaakov had for Yosef was because Yosef was the tattletale. He was the one who brought in front of his their father the schmutz, you know, the bad news about how they were behaving.
Kept him informed.
Correct. And that's called, in the language of the Meshech Chochma, miskabed biklonam. That's a very famous phrase, a two-word phrase that you'll see throughout the writings of our great giants, miskabed biklonam. That sometimes when so-and-so is down, it builds me up. Because by comparison, I'm greater than he is. So Yosef, by putting down the brothers and telling Yaakov what terrible things they did, he built himself up. And that's something that they absolutely couldn't tolerate. That he would win the love of his father at their expense. Biklona. Biklona means with their disgrace. By disgracing them, he built himself up and found favor in the eyes of his father. That they couldn't tolerate. Lachen, and therefore vayisnu oso, therefore they hated him. Now, I wanted to make a comment here of my own. If you take a look at the last pasuk before Vayisne'u Oso, you'll see it says, V'Yisrael Ahavis Yosef Mikol Banav, and that's the inference here in the Meshech Chochma. But then it says, Ki Venz Kunim Hulo. Again, if you translate that pasuk literally, it means because he was born to Yaakov in Yaakov's older age.
Ben Zukunim.
But the Ramban has a different take on Ben Zukunim. And he says that the word Zaken, in its root, means a chacham. And Zikna means chachma. Throughout the Torah, whenever you...
Torah, he learned in Shem and Eber.
Correct. And now the Ramban says that Ki Ben Zkunim Hu Lo means that Yaakov Avinu passed on the Torah to Yosef. Yosef was meant to be the next in line, so that when a father has many children, he tends to choose one of them as his successor. Now you find this in Hasidic circles, you know, very often a Rebbe will choose one of his sons, more often than not the oldest, but it doesn't always have to be the oldest, and he's going to be my successor. I'm going to pass on to him all the knowledge, I'm going to transmit to him all the experience that he needs to have. And the brothers realized, according to the Ramban, that Yaakov had chosen, singled out Yosef as being the successor, with a capital T-H-E. And that's called Ben Zkunim Ulo, and the Ramban goes out of his way to point out that Yaakov transmitted all his Torah to Yosef, including even the secrets of the Torah, and that was a cause for hatred. But the Meshech Chochma doesn't say that. The Meshech Chochma says that let's read the previous pasuk before that. So you have three psukim. Let me just summarize them. One pasuk says, "Vayaveh Yosef es dibasam ra'al avihem," that Yosef was the snitcher. The second pasuk says that Yosef, according to the Ramban's interpretation, was chosen as the next in line to transmit and pump all the Torah of Yaakov. He pumped into Yosef. And then the third pasuk says that the brothers realized that father Jacob loved Yosef more than all the brothers, vayisnu oso, and they hated him. Now it's interesting that the Meshech Chochma, in explaining the source of that hatred of vayisnu oso, he goes back to psukim, to the first of these three psukim about Vayave Yosef es dibasam ra'al avihem, that the source and the cause for hatred was because Yosef played that role as the tattletale. But I was suggesting that wouldn't it make more sense to use the second pasuk, which is closer to Vayisnu Oso, and that's that they hated Yosef because he was the one that was singled out and chosen amongst the brothers to receive the Torah of Father Jacob. So I'm going to suggest the following answer. that the brothers realized, no doubt, that Yosef had been chosen to be the heir, as far as the legacy, the Torah legacy of their father Yaakov. But that wouldn't have caused hatred.
No.
Let me suggest why. Because again, I'm trying to understand why the Meshech Chachma didn't think of what I thought of, which seems more appropriate in terms of the sequence of the verses. And I'm suggesting that Rabbi Simcha felt that it would be impossible to cause hatred because of Yosef's choice as the recipient of Torah. Why? Because in every generation, starting with Avram Avinu, there's a process by which the grade of Torah has to decide which of his children is going to be the recipient, who is the most appropriate, and who has the qualities that are necessary to be that link in the chain of transmission of Messiah HaTorah. For example, Avram had two sons. He had Yitzchak and Yishmael. Who did he choose as the legacy for the transmission of Torah?
Yitzchak.
Yitzchak has two sons, Yaakov and Esav. Who does he choose?
Yaakov.
Now Yaakov has a bunch of sons. He's got 12 sons. He's got to choose one of them. Who is the most appropriate to be in charge? He'll be the Rosh Hashiva to make sure that the Torah is transmitted. And the answer is going to be Yosef. Why? Because Yaakov felt that Yosef had all the qualities that were necessary, the greatness, for being the next link in the chain, and he would be in charge of the Mesoras HaTorah. That would not be a cause for hatred. They couldn't hate someone because he is going to play that major role of being the Rosh Hashiva to supervise and guarantee the Mesoras HaTorah. And therefore, Be'er Simcha was dumbfounded to try to find an answer to the question, why did the brothers harbor this hatred against Yosef? It couldn't have been because Yosef was going to play the role as the transmitter of the Torah. He's the link to the next generation. So therefore, Rav Meir Simcha had to come up with some other answer. So he went back to the previous pasuk. And the previous pasuk says that Yosef was the one who brought the Diborah El Avim. That's already something they couldn't tolerate. That already triggered off a tremendous hatred.
But he also had dreams.
Okay, we'll get to the dreams now. So let's fast forward now to Psukim Hey and Vav. In Hey it says that Yosef had a dream, and he transmitted that dream to his brothers. We're talking now about one dream. There are going to be actually two dreams, but we're only up to the first dream. And the Torah describes and testifies as to how Yosef transmitted that first dream. Vayomer Alehem, he says to them, I'm reading from the Psukim, Shimu noa chalom azeh shachalamti. Now, Rav Meir Simcha wants to focus on two words here. He wants to emphasize the word Shimu noa. You could have actually left out those two words, or he could have said Shimu, or he could have said no. What's Shimu no? Is there some special significance and meaning to that opening phrase, Shimu no? And then Yosef goes ahead in Pasuk Zion and transmits the first dream with the Alumos and the Sheaves and so forth and so on. Says Rav Meir Simcha, Lidati, in my opinion, Yosef had a definite purpose in relating the first dream to Yosef. He had an agenda. His goal was al derech hatochacha. In the previous pasuk, the Torah testifies to the fact that the brothers harbored a hatred against Yosef. That's a terrible avera, to hate your brother. And Yosef wanted to give them tochacha. And there's a secret code word for tochacha, for rebuke. When you want to rebuke someone, the opening words before you rebuke someone have to be Shimu na. And how does Rav Meir Simcha know this? Because the Midrash tells us that whenever it says the words Shimu na, it is in the mouth of the prophets who are giving rebuke against Klal Yisrael. For example, the Midrash quotes a pasuk towards the end of Tanakh in Sefer Micha, and it says, Shimu na es hasher Hashem omer. Listen carefully to what God has said. So the word Shimuna is a phrase, and it captures the idea of Tochacha. So what happened is, the brothers hated Yosef. Yosef now wants to give them Tochacha.
Give him what?
Tochacha. Tochacha, I'd write it on the board if I had castigation, rebuke, Tochacha.
Well, it was a prophecy.
Yeah, it's a prophecy, but according to Rabbi Simcha, this prophecy is going to engender how do you say when you raise something one decibel, you know, make it more intense? It's going to intensify their hatred. So Rabbi Simcha is trying to justify why Yosef is telling them this dream. And the dream is about the fact that the brothers are going to come and bow down to him. That doesn't seem to be appropriate as a response to their hatred against Yosef. He's only, in a sense, adding fuel to the fire.
But that's what caused them to do what they did that led to the fulfillment of the prophecy.
Okay, so you could say your pshat. I'm trying to understand what Rav Meir Simcha's pshat is. Rav Meir Simcha's pshat is that his goal, his agenda in telling them the story was tochacha, was to castigate them, to get them to rectify and straighten themselves out. Mm. And how does Rav Meir Simcha have the chutzpah to say such a thing? And the answer is, he finds this in a secret password called Shimunah, which the Medrash says that whenever you go through Tanakh, and you see that the Navi says Shimuna, you should know that the purpose of his prophecy is Tochacha. It is to castigate the people.
It's kind of like in English, if you start a sentence with, listen here, you know? You're sort of like, you know already that you're saying something kind of rebuke to the person.
Right, you know, straighten yourself out. Listen here, you know, you're not behaving properly.
Shimuna means listen here, you know.
Now, just give me, again, if you can give me just a minute to give you the whole picture here, because this is a very beautiful piece in Rav Meir Simcha. Beautiful, it's gorgeous. He says the following, that Yosef had an agenda, he had a purpose. What was the content of his tochacha? He wanted to give them tochacha. Says Rav Meir Simcha, he wanted to save them and spare them from punishment. He says, Loma tisnu osi, why should you continue hating me? It's not worth it for you. You better get your act together and overcome that hatred. Nechratz aleichem al zem mishpat. Mishpat means there's a harsh judgment and there's a verdict up in the heavens, in the heavenly court, that is going to put you in a very bad light. You are going to suffer the repercussions of this terrible sin of hatred. Therefore, shuvu. Shuvu means do tshuva. Repent. Leave your hatred out. Somehow overcome your hatred. Velotisnu osia, don't hate me. Because us, then, if you can overcome your hatred, yinochem Hashem aleichem, God will change His mind and He will reverse the decision up in the heavens to punish you. And this is what Chazal mean in the Medrash when they say that Kach hayu hanaviim mochichim os eschem, that whenever the Navi would give you rebuke and he wanted to scare you and warn you about the repercussions of your actions and the terrible punishment, he would always open up with the words Shimuna. Now, at this point, if you're following the text, which I photocopied for you, you should press the return button. Ubechalon Hasheni. Now Rabbi Simcha is fast forwarding to the second dream. And he is basically asking the same identical question that he asked with regard to the first dream. In the first dream, Rabbi Simcha was baffled. Why is Yosef, knowing full well that the brothers hate him, why is he transmitting these dreams about his superior status over them? And we can add a little bit of extra teeth to empathize with Rav Meir Simcha's question when we get to the second dream. Because the Pasuk testifies that after Yosef shared the first dream, the brothers responded by saying, Vayomru lo echav, hamalochtim loch aleinu, im masholtim sholbanu, vayosifu od sno oso. How do you interpret those words? Not literally. Vayasifu od sno oso.
they hate him even more.
Even more. So here, let's watch the agenda of Yosef, according to Rabbi Simcha. The agenda, the purpose of Yosef transmitting them the first dream was to get them to do tshuva, to terminate the sinah. And guess what? His efforts failed. Not only did they fail miserably, but they even had the exact reverse impact. Instead of getting them to drop the sinah, he intensified the sinah because he was building himself up and they're going to come and bow down. That intensified the sinah, the hatred. So now Rabbi Simcha has a problem. Chalom HaSheni, the second dream, where they come, you know, the sun and the moon and all the stars, the 11 stars are going to come and bow down to his star. I mean, that's going to further, isn't it logical to assume that that's going to further intensify their hatred? Why did Yosef convey the second dream to them? Couldn't he have learned from his first mistake that the dream would only intensify the sinner? If his purpose, his agenda was to reduce the sinner, what good would the second dream have? It would seem logically that if you would ask me, you know, if I was reading this as a piece of literature, I would have said the second dream is only going to intensify the hatred even further. So Yosef is working against his interests.
Can I take a guess here? The fact that he had a second dream might reinforce the fact that it really is nevuah. At the first dream, they'll say, "What are you saying to us? What shtuyot are you telling us?" But if it's happened the second time, maybe they would have pause for thought and say, "Wait, maybe he's really getting nevuah."
Possibly. But Rabbi Simcha wants to analyze the numbers in the two dreams. Let's go back to the first dream. What's the magic number? How many alumim are going to bow down to his aluma? It doesn't matter, but you know the answer to that question. There are 12 tribes, so if 11. So you have a total of 11. Look at the second dream.
It's father and mother also.
Excellent. What's missing from the first dream, says Rabbi Simcha, is the father and the mother. Now, we're not going to talk about the mother because she's already dead. So we have to have a whole discussion about why he mentions Mother Rachel. I mean, she doesn't seem to have any place here. But that, again, that's not our subject for tonight.
Okay.
So you can't hold me responsible for that. What I'm responsible for tonight is the addition of Yaakov Avinu. Herein lies the difference between the first dream and the second dream. And this will reveal the agenda of Yosef and the reason why Yosef thinks that by telling them the second dream, that will remove the sinah, the hatred. Says Rabbi Simcha, ubechalon hasheni sipro lahem. Nevertheless, he tells them the second dream, even though relating the first dream was an absolute flop and a failure.
What are we on now?
I have to apologize because my copy, where I wrote my notes, is not the same as yours.
Oh, okay.
So if you give me a... if you give me... I'll give it right back to you.
I got the
gist of your
first thing I saw here. I'm missing... you said...
Ubechalom HaSheni, you're on page Kuf Samach Tes.
Yes.
And you're on the left column, on the third line, and the last word in the third line.
Oh, Chalom HaSheni, okay, I got it. Yes, thank you.
Again, I would have pressed the return button before B'chalom HaSheni, because there's an implicit question in that space between the period and B'chalom HaSheni. And that implicit question is, why would he be stupid enough to tell them the second dream when he saw that the result of the first dream was that they hated him even more? And the answer is leman yasiru sinasam, that they would get rid of and terminate their hatred. Why? Why would they terminate their hatred? He says the following. The reason for their hatred is because who are you, Yosef? We're going to come down and bow down to you? Mi samcha, who appointed you as the great kavod? You know, you're the glory of God and we have to bow down to you? They are insulted. They are very sensitive. How could it be that you're lording yourself over us? We're also important people. Why do we have to bow down to you? Here's where Yosef wants to detonate the bomb, so to speak. And what does he tell them? Ein zeh heder. Heder means the lack of. Kavod. Umaila lahem. It's not because they don't deserve honor and respect, or they don't have. Maila means they're not important people. Rak re'eh, take a look, says Yosef. Ki aviv, my father, gam ken yishtachav elo. Now my father is certainly greater, he's the greatest of them all, and yet he is also bowing down. So it means that this is part of some sort of a, call it a divine plan, you want to call it a prophecy, but again, I'm not going down that route again, I'm just trying to focus on the words of Rabbi Meir Simcha. Rabbi Meir Simcha is telling us that Yosef in the second dream is going to prove that it's not that his role here and his special glory and the respect and the bowing down is because they're low. Because if it's them, if they are low down on the totem pole, that's called Heder Kavru Mala, then why would Yaakov be bowing down to Yosef?
Oh. And he now, didn't tell to do that.
What did he say?
He didn't say, I'm going to make you bow down to me. It says you are going to do that.
Right, but who's...
Like out of his hands.
Again, get the punchline here. The punchline is, who's bowing down to Yosef? If the brothers are bowing down to Yosef, that puts the brothers on a very low level, that they're bowing down to Yosef. And that's going to just increase their hatred against Yosef. Sure. But if, on the other hand, Yaakov himself, who's clearly the greatest in this whole matrix, is bowing down to Yosef, then they shouldn't see this as a p'chisas ha-kovet, as we call it in Hebrew. This is not lowering them down. If Yaakov is willing to bow down to Yosef, there must be some sort of alternative explanation here. And it's not because you guys are low, because you're not going to say that Yaakov is low when he's bowing down.
But hatred is so strong.
Wait 1 second. Please, we're getting to the punchline. The next line is mind-boggling. I'm extremely, passionately excited about the next line in Rabbi Simcha.
Let's continue.
So let's continue, because I don't want to lose the passion that I have for this piece in Rabbi Meir Simcha, because the next line is amazing. Rabbi Meir Simcha looks at the pasuk, and I'm telling you, Rabosa, I could read these psukim a million times and not notice this. The Torah has emphasized time and time again the hatred of the brothers to Yosef. And you'll see it again and again. For example, you'll see it in Pasuk Dalid, it says, Vayisnu Oso. Then in Pasuk Hey, it says, Vayosifu Otsno Oso. The Torah, time and again, emphasizes what word?
Sina.
Hatred. Now watch this. What happens after Yosef relates to the brothers the second dream? We would have expected a kind of repeat performance, just like the first dream incited them and intensified their hatred. Vayasifu odes no. So we would expect a similar kind of pasuk after the second dream. But get this, says Rabbi Meir Simcha. Look at the pasuk. We failed to read the pasuk. It says, Vayikanu bo echav. Notice that the Torah is now substituting one word for another word. Until now, what was the subject?
Sina.
Now the subject is what?
Kina.
Which is jealousy. Says Rabbi Meir Simcha, again, this is my passion here. Rabbi Meir Simcha, I think, revealed a jewel here in this whole thing, and it has deep psychological meaning for us. And he's saying the following. Lachem Kasuv, the Torah, the finale here, so to speak, the postscript of this entire episode is Vayikanu Bo Echav. It's not Vayisnu Oso, but rather Vayikanu Bo. And there was a transition over here. There was no longer a sinner. Why? Because he clearly indicated to them, in the context of the dreams, that this was not a p'chisas ha-kavod. He was not lowering and insulting their glory, their honor. And what was the proof of the second dream? Because who also bowed down to Yosef?
Yaakov.
And then it says, V'aviv shomar es hadavar. And you look in Rashi, and Rashi says, you know, Yaakov was waiting for the fulfillment of the dreams. Leave that all out. Rabbi Meir Simcha cuts that all out. Rabbi Meir Simcha says, you know what it means? Vayikanu bo achav. They were jealous of him. And then v'aviv shomar es hadavar. Meaning, Yaakov Avinu was not jealous. Meaning, the fact that we all came down to bow down to Yosef, that's not going to incur or incite them to hatred, because they're not being, they shouldn't be insulted or slighted. Even someone greater than Yosef is bowing down, but it could incite kina, which is jealousy. Yeah, the brothers are going to be jealous. Because no matter what, even if it wasn't a p'chisas ha-kavod, what's happening is that Yosef's status is being elevated. And that creates a natural response of jealousy. But Aviv Shomer HaSedover, Shomer HaSedover means he overcame any sense of jealousy. Even though Yaakov heard this dream and understood that he, Yaakov, would bow down to Yosef, which means that Yosef is on a greater level to some extent than Yaakov himself. Yaakov is not jealous. Why isn't he jealous? So here Rabbi Simcha invokes a sugya in Masechta Sanhedrin. The Gemara says, Bakol, meaning for everybody, Odom is Kane. A person is jealous of anybody. Chutz, with one exception, Ibno. If my son supersedes me and he becomes the king and he becomes the greatest in his generation, he's elected as president, I was only a senator or a member of the house, I'm not jealous of him. A father is not jealous of his son.
Proud.
He's proud of his son's achievement and he's not jealous. Says Rav Meir Simcha, the ratio of this pasuk, the first part and the second part is a lesson in contrast. The brothers are going to be jealous. Why are they jealous? Because look how great Yosef is. We're not great, he's great. We're not slighted, because even Yosef is even greater than Yaakov, so we can't be slighted or insulted. But nevertheless, the fact on the ground is that Yosef is being elevated to this tremendous transcendental state, and therefore we have jealousy. But Yaakov is not jealous, because a father is not jealous of his son. So now I ask you the following question. According to Rabbi Simcha, did Yosef achieve his goal?
Yes,
he achieved his goal.
He got rid of the sinner, but he had a side effect. He substituted it with kinah, which at the end of the day didn't really help him, because either way they wanted to kill him. But he did achieve his narrow goal of getting rid of the sinner.
So then this is, Murray, I agree with you 99%, I disagree with you in 1%. What's the 1%? There are two averis in the Torah, two violations that should be compared and contrasted. One is called hatred, lo tisnas achicha bilvavecha, and the other is called kinah. And the Torah says in the Aseres HaDibros, you should not be jealous of someone else. However, they're incomparable. That you should not compare the two. You shouldn't take kinah and sinah and wrap them up in one bag and say they're equally heavy. And they weigh the same negative volume, so to speak. No. Sinah is a lot worse than kinah. Kinah is an individual challenge. And we all face this challenge. You know, we look to the right, look to the left. We see there are people that are better than us. And we naturally feel a sense of kinah. The Torah somehow requires of us to overcome that kinah. The Beis Halevi, that was my Rebbe's great-grandfather, in his commentary on the Torah, has a whole presentation. How do you overcome kinah? Very difficult, very challenging.
Beis Halevi was Rav Soloveitchik's great-grandfather?
Great-grandfather. Yes. Same name, by the way. Same exact name. Right. They were both Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik.
I didn't know that was Beis Halevi.
So the Beis Halevi, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, was the Rav in a city called Brisk. Uh-huh. His son, Rav Chaim,
the
Brisk Rebbe
that I hear of,
right, the Brisk Rav, the son Rav Chaim, took over after the Beis Halevi, and then Rav Chaim's son
Moshe,
he didn't become the Rav in Brisk for, again, that's a whole parsha in history, but in any event, he was the next link in the generation. Then my Rebbe, Rav Yosef Dov, was the next gen. So Rav Yosef Dov's great grandfather, his grandfather was Rav Chaim, his great grandfather was the Beis Halevi. He has a tremendous piece in his Pirush al Torah about how a person could possibly overcome jealousy. Very difficult. But jealousy is a bad midah, a very bad midah. But we all suffer from it, some more than others. There are those who are tzaddikim and they don't have any jealousy whatsoever. Aaron HaKohen, for example, was your paradigm of someone who had no, he suffered from no jealousy whatsoever. But, you know, we're not all Aaron HaKohen. You know.
Yeah, so when he gives a story that a person is going, he wants the Cadillac of his neighbor, and he has such a strong desire, he must have that Cadillac himself. But then you take that person, and he's crossing the lake, it's full of ice, thinking he's going to go from one side to the other safely, and in the middle, kerplunk, is a thin piece of ice, and he starts drowning. He doesn't think about the Cadillac of his neighbor, he's thinking about surviving this ordeal. Right. So when you focus on yourself, introspection and you're concerned just about your dalet amos, then all of a sudden the neighbor's possessions don't come into play.
Right. He also adds that a villager doesn't dream of marrying the daughter of a villager doesn't agree dream of marrying the daughter of the king, of, yes. You know, the princess. I'm sorry if I didn't mean to. You know, our tendency is that we always get a little bit diverted, if you follow, digression. The point of the, I don't want you to miss the beauty of this Rav Meir Simcha. Rav Meir Simcha is really answering a number of questions here with a thesis and a presentation. First of all, he's answering why Yosef related the first dream to his brother. For his brothers, and the answer is written in code in two words, Shimuna. And this was Tochacha, and Yosef had an agenda. And his agenda was, Rabosai, you better overcome hatred. Because if you don't overcome hatred, the punishment is inscribed up in Shemayim. It's a terrible business
for you. And that didn't work. Oh.
Since it didn't work, and the Torah testifies that it only had the opposite effect, and it intensified their hatred, why did Yosef make the mistake of telling them the second dream? So that's an even more difficult question than the first question, because here Tochacha is not going to help you as an answer, because what do you mean Tochacha? You saw the results of your Tochacha, Yashikayach. You know, what did you get from this Tochacha? We have also halach in Hilchos Tochacha that there's a mitzvah not to give Tochacha. You know, if you know it's not going to be, it's not going to be heard. Comes along Rav Meir Simcha and he asks the following question. Sometimes another question can answer another question. Why does it say after the second dream that Vayikanu Boecha, that they were jealous of him? Until now, over and over again, the Torah was harping on sinah. And here Rav Meir Simcha wants to put all these questions together in a cholent, and he wants to say, Adarabba, Yosef had an agenda, and he was successful. The second dream would achieve a goal which the first dream did not achieve. Again, Rav Meir Simcha is going to have to face the music. Why? Why did the second dream achieve this goal? But how do we know that the second dream achieved the goal? Because all of a sudden, the Torah drops the ball on Sinah, and now we end up with Kinah. Not that kin is a great thing, but it's not that punishment that you get for sinah. I mean, all of Jewish history is basically all the golus, the exile, the destruction. It's all a result of sinah, right? What we call sinat chinam and so forth and so on. And the paradigm of sinat chinam is always this parsha that we're unfortunately reading this Shabbos. You know, every year when I get to Parshas Vayeshev, I'm like depressed, you know, because all of Jewish history is written here in this parsha. All of the churban and all the exile and a sin that repeats itself unfortunately over and over again. That's called sinah. All of a sudden, after the second dream, sinah's not there. Where is it? Again, only if you read the psukim with that in incisive eye of someone as great as Rav Meir Simcha, who, by the way, is more famous for his work on the Rambam and in Halacha than he is for Chumash, but our purpose is to see how a great mind looks at a pasuk in Chumash. Now, did the Tochacha complete its goal? Obviously not. But they did a tshuva. And they dropped from the level of sinah down to kinah.
But I was saying that in the bottom line, it didn't help Yosef.
Right.
In the bottom line, it
helped the brothers.
When you want to kill somebody, right, they did want to kill him. If you might say it's only jealousy, but certainly there has to be a certain amount of hatred there if you want to kill him.
Okay. Okay. So you want to disagree with Rabbi Simcha?
I'm not disagreeing.
Rabbi Goldstein is not here tonight, but I would certainly have said this to him.
I'm not disagreeing.
You
I'm
can disagree with Rabbi Simcha. I'm only here to present his thesis.
I'm not disagreeing. Yeah. I'm just saying that even though they dropped in favor of jealousy, but at the end of the day, they were going to kill him. So it didn't help him that much.
Okay, but you know what? Maybe the fact that Reuven was able to convince them that we should not kill him, even Yehuda came up with his compromise sheet to let's sell him as an Eved. Maybe all that was because there was a certain mitigation of the sinah. And that, according to Rabbi Simcha, reveals itself in the difference between the Reish and the Sefer. The beginning where it says sinah and the Sefer, it only mentions kinah. And kina is a terrible thing, but it's a low decibel relative to sinna. Again, let's look at it also from a perspective of Klal Yisrael. You see, you can have many members of Klal Yisrael that are suffering from jealousy, but that's really a private individual. You can add many numbers together and reach a high number, but it's really just a bunch of numbers. Are the brothers functioning here as one whole, or is it every individual unto himself? And that might be the difference between sinna and kina. Again, this is just Berzon talking. This is not Rabbi Simcha. But when the malady and the corruption is sinna, then it's the entire group of Shiftei Yisrael working as one. We hate Yosef. It's a sinna that is Klal Yisrael. It's almost a malady that contaminates the whole Knesset Yisrael. As that Yosef was able to mitigate. Mm-hmm. Kina is already Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. Each one is suffering from kina, and he's manifesting that avera of kina. And again, it has tremendous power. Kina, not the corruptive power, but it's already an individual sin, and that's going to have repercussions throughout Jewish history. Because if Jewish history is just an unfolding of a long saga of punishment for Mechiras Yosef, and there's so many proofs to that, even the Asar Ruge Malchus and all that, it's because it's a Klal Yisrael Dikasinah. And to some extent, Yosef was successful only according to Rabbi Simcha. I don't think there's anyone else who came up with this idea in mitigating that sinah. And it became perhaps just an individual Avera, which we shouldn't underestimate, but it's not the same as Sinas Yisrael on the level of a Klal. Wait, now Rabbi Simcha says, I can answer two questions. Question number one, why did Yosef bother with the second dream? What did he think he would accomplish with the second dream? Wouldn't it have the same effect of just upping the ante and the decibels on the level of hatred? And secondly, why does the parsha end with the words V'aviv shamar es hadavar? Seems totally out of place. Rashi grapples with this, comes up with a whole thesis. Rabbi Simcha says, I have a better idea. What was Yosef's agenda in the second dream? It was introducing Yaakov into the picture. When does a person suffer from hatred? When he feels downtrodden. Right? Like, let's say, for example, very often we find, even in the history of the Chashmonaim, for example, since we're almost ready for Hanukkah, that an Eved, a slave, will rise up and kill his master. The Chashmonaim were wiped out by their own slaves. A slave feels low. A slave feels that he's been subjugated. He's been insulted.
Unimportant.
He's unimportant. He's low. He's like the scum of the earth, pardon the expression. And therefore, he's going to rise up out of hatred. I wouldn't call a slave kina, in a sense. I mean, again, you could always say he's jealous of his master. You know, his master has beautiful, artwork in his house and so on. I don't think that's it. I think it's really hatred because he feels that he's been lowered. Again, the Torah fights against this, and the Torah says, treat your Eved better than you treat yourself. But in classical slavery, a master-slave relationship, the slave feels slighted. He feels that he's been placed low, low, low down. So Yosef has a kash. He says, if that's why you hate me, then how is it that Yaakov Avinu, who's clearly greater than all of us, he comes to bow down to me? It's not because Yaakov is lower, but because of some reason beyond our comprehension. It's some divine plan. But don't be slighted here. How can you be slighted? Am I going to tell you that I'm greater than Yaakov Avinu? For sure not.
And he wasn't saying he was greater than them.
So therefore, don't be insulted. Don't feel that I've made you like the lowest of the low. And that feeling of being slighted and being insulted and being lowest of the low, that's what incurs and incites a person to hatred. In this sense, Yosef was successful. At the end of the day, though, Yosef is building himself up, and there's an element of jealousy here. And every single one of the brothers, the way we described it on an individual level, has to grapple with that challenge of jealousy and deal with that. And it's a very dangerous and corruptive Mida Ra, bad attribute, but it's not that sinna as a result of the fact that you guys are nothing. You know, you're a bunch of low, low slaves. I'm thinking out loud that maybe Yosef could have proved this to them in another way, because it says in the pasuk, "Vunares b'nei Bilhah v'sb'nei Zilpa," that Yosef had a tremendously close relationship with the children of the Pilagshim. And in fact, according to one opinion, the children of the Pilagshim, and we'll see this, I don't think we'll get to it tonight, or the concubines, they were opposed to killing Yosef. And it we'll see, again, I don't want to give out all the secrets of Rabbi Simcha, but he lines it up as 6 against 5. Maybe that's also part of Yosef's agenda here. You shouldn't be slighted here as if I'm treating you on a lower level, because my best buddies are the lowest. You know, I'm like the I'm like the Martin Luther King. You know, I love the black slaves. Let's say, you know, going back before the Civil War, right? I hang out with these guys. And if Yaakov is bowing down to me, it must mean that this prophecy is not a matter of lowering someone below the level. Now Rabbi Simcha says, I have another answer to another question. And that is, Aviv Shomer Asadov.
What is what?
Aviv Shomer Asadov. What do those words mean? And Rabbi Simcha says what they mean is that a father is not jealous of a son. Shomar Asadov means he withheld any sense of jealousy. If a father has to bow down to his son, you know, imagine your son becomes the king or the president and you have to bow down to him, would you sense jealousy? And he quotes a Gemara that says, no, a father is not jealous of his son. He overcomes any tendency towards jealousy.
But also these dreams. These dreams were coming from Hashem. He didn't tell them, oh, this is something I dream about all day. He had a dream. Right. He didn't.
Since I mentioned Martin Luther King, I had a dream.
Can I ask you?
Think about that.
Yes.
Can I ask you, after Ketanta, I think you have got Ketanta Pasin. Does it say Sina or Kina in the Torah, in the Chumash? Well, you know, when after you got that, I remember it says something.
Oh, so. Murray, the truth is that I addressed this before you came in.
No,
it's okay. Don't be sorry. I just want to give you the gist of what I claimed. The Ramban says that the Ketonis Pasim is a hemshech of the beginning of the pasuk Ki Ben Zkunim Ulo. Again, I don't want to, because I spent 15 minutes on this, so if you can get it in 60 seconds, fine.
Yeah,
if not, we have to go on.
Outside.
But basically, the Ramban Shita is that Yaakov Avinu chose Yosef to be the transmitter of Torah. He would be the Rosh Hashiva for the next generation, just like Avram had chosen Yitzchak and rejected Yishmael for that candidacy, and Yitzchak had chosen Yaakov and rejected Esau. So too, Yaakov had to make a decision, who's going to be the spiritual leader of Klal Yisrael to transmit the Torah. That's the Ramban. Again, this is a long, long discussion.
But does it say Sinok?
And in the same breath, it says, V'osalo ketonis pasim. So that Ketonis Pasim was like the special garment of the Admor, you know, today is Yad Kislev, right, of the Hasidish Rebbe. He's the one who's going to be the Rebbe in charge. In the next Pasuk, it says, Vayisnu Oso. So I ask the following question.
Sina, okay.
According to Rav Meir Simcha, if you're looking for the source of Sina, why does Rav Meir Simcha, that was the previous paragraph that you missed, why does he pin the tail on Dibasam Ra? Why not pin the tail on the fact that Yosef was chosen and elevated above his brothers as the transmitter of Torah, and he was given the Ketonis Pasim? Again, the Ketonis Pasim has a lot of deep meaning. It has to do with the Mesoras HaTorah. Why wouldn't that generate Sinah? So what we suggested was, reading between the lines in Rabbi Simcha, is that Rabbi Simcha could not accept that. He had to go back to Dibasam Ra. Why? Because the choice of Yosef is going to be the decision of Yaakov. Yaakov has to choose amongst the 12 brothers one who's going to be the Rosh Hashiva. You can't have two Rosh Hashivas, right. You have to have one. And Yaakov made the decision that of all the Midos and of all the Yosef was the one, he was the one who had it all, so to speak. And he would receive the Torah, he would get the Ketonis Pasim, he would pass it on. That could not have been the reason to generate Sinah. So when we read the word Sinah the next Pasuk, according to Rabbi Simcha, we have to go back two Psukim earlier to what it says, Vayavei Yosef es Dibasam Ra'ah. That was a long
thing. It doesn't say Kina. That was my point. It doesn't say Kina there. It says Sina. I thought it said Kina. But it doesn't say if it says Sina, then that means what he's saying now, even more. You know?
Right.
He was trying to take all that Sina that they had for all those different reasons and and get rid of it
and terminate.
And turned it into kinah. Yeah.
And it ended up as kinah. Again, he would have been happy if it wouldn't have been kinah, but that's a natural response. Very hard.
Very nice.
Very difficult.
Nice. Very nice.
Well, let's see if we have time. How are we doing on the clock? Good. We have time for at least one more shtickle, one more piece in the Meshech Chochmah. The Meshech Chochmah wants to know, what is it about the first dream that intensified their sinah? And again, we discussed before the possibility that they felt downtrodden. Here a Be'er Simcha has a diuk in the pasuk three times over, the same word three times over, because again, as we've said a million times over, Rabbi Simcha is very sensitive to the choice of language of words, to add another dimension, another answer to the question why that first dream generated sinah. Now you and I would have said that it generates sinah because he is Yosef's aluma, and their 11 alumos are bowing down to his aluma, and they feel slighted. They're like the slave mentality. Says Rabbi Simcha, Yosef did something else over here, which generated an intensity, higher decibel level of sin. What does Rabbi Simcha see in the first dream? Before we spoke about the word Shimunah. I'm not going to go over that now. But look at this. It says, Vehine, Anachnu malmim alumim betoch hasodah. Vehine, kom alumosi v'gam nitzoma. Vehine, tesubena alumosechem, etc.
Three
vehines. The pasuk could have left out all three vehines without any loss to the meaning of the dream and its substance. Why vehine? I wouldn't have had an answer to this question because I'm not Rabbi Simcha, but if you're Rabbi Simcha, you have an answer to that question. And this is a Sifri in Parshas Korach, which by the way means that Rabbi Simcha knew probably every Sifri in the Torah, and he's quoting a Sifri in Parshas Korach. What happens in Parshas Korach? The Sifri says that the word hine always indicates besimcha. In other words, you can say something, and you know, if you record, what do they have those computers today that are able to record your words? You know, they translate it into letters.
That's computer, your phone does that too. You can
right, speak, smartphone and
you
all
can
that.
Speak into your phone,
but what's the name for that technology? What's the name of that technology? Do we have a name for it? Can we give a name? Make up a name. Voice recognition, right?
Voice recognition or voice to text.
Okay, so voice recognition might actually not be a good example that I want to give for this Rav Meir Simcha. But let's talk about a machine, like for example. When my wife, I accompany my wife for a medical checkup, the physician spoke into a microphone. He gave a 10-minute speech into the microphone, and it's all recorded in letters in a computer.
Yes.
So I don't know what that's called. It's not voice recognition.
Voice to text.
Voice to text.
But voice to text includes voice recognition. It recognizes the voice.
Right.
And then simply, an additional thing, it takes what it recognizes and creates text out.
So I'm interested now just simply in text. Why? What am I trying to demonstrate?
You can do that here.
And it'll write, you say something and it writes letters?
Say it here and it'll put it in words.
In words, great. Maybe I have that on my phone and I never knew it. So
Google Translate.
So you'll send it to me. Send me a link.
You could Google things by simply speaking and text will appear in Google search bar and it will
right.
Search.
So Meir Simcha says that basically that, you know, convert voice to text in the case of the first dream would work with the exception of three vehines. What do I mean? The machine doesn't know the inflection, again, in the case of a text, leave out voice recognition, because again, that's just going to mess up my marshal. I'm just trying to give it marshal.
So it does not leave no inflection.
Once you convert voice into text, You'll never know by reading the text whether it was said with Vehine, with Simcha, he was dancing in the streets.
Exactly.
Or it wasn't. He says that's why the Torah went out of its way to say Vehine, because herein lies the secret as to why the dream incurred a greater level of sinna. If you would omit the word Vehine three times, and, you know, Yosef says, look, I had a dream, there's a certain prophecy here, this is what's going to happen, it's a divine dream, don't blame me for it. But who asked you to add Vesimcha three times? Hine. It means that you're gloating. Is there such a word in English, gloating?
Yes.
Gloating. Yes. You're gloating about it. Do you follow?
Mm-hmm.
You are dancing. You're very, very happy about this.
Rubbing it in your face.
Exactly. Perfect.
Which sounds like...
Rubbing it in your face.
Yes, yes.
He is saying, you know what? This is gewaltig. This is great. I am going to be the Aluma, and your Alumos are going to come and bow down to me. Says Rabbi Simcha, here's where Yosef overstepped his bounds, and he was not sensitive to the brothers. True, whenever you get a prophecy, and it's a good prophecy, it's, you know, we're talking about Yosef at the ultimate, he's going to be the power, I think we discussed this last week, to defeat Esau at the end of days. Esau means Amalek in this context. Great! You can be besimcha. But don't rub it into the brothers. That extra element is not necessary. You don't have to say it with the inflection of, you know, I'm dancing. You know, it's Yad Kislev. I'm dancing. You know,
mm-hmm.
He says l'simcha zuma osa. What's the role here or the accomplishment of simcha? The al kol pratu prat in every detail of this dream. He's sameach. Oh, now Rabbeinu Simcha says, I can answer a question. So beautiful when he has a thesis and he answers a question. Look at the pasuk. The pasuk says, "Vayosifu od sno oso." This is in the aftermath of the first dream. They intensified their hatred. Now ask me a question when I read to you the next four words. Al chalomosav vi al dvarav. What question should you ask?
English.
On his dreams and on his words.
You normally say, well, his dreams. Well, I mean, he was repeating them in the dream. Dreams
well,
are
you know,
redundant.
Take your choice. It's redundant. Either say al chalomosav or al dvarav.
But now he's saying because the words mean the hine, the extra
inflection, right? In other words, chalomosav is the content because, as we discussed before, they felt in the first dream they felt slighted. You know, who are we? We're going to be the slaves that have to bow down to you. We're so low. But the Aldvarov adds a whole new element to the equation. Aldvarov means the way you communicated it. With such simcha, you're gloating and you're so happy, rubbing it in our face, that caused the hatred.
Is that what it's saying that
if
he
that's
did?
Not the most beautiful thing you heard, I
does
mean...
Does Rashi say anything about that Aldvarov?
But is that what it's saying?
Not that I know of.
Is it saying that he was gloating?
Let me give you a chumash because I feel badly that you don't have a chumash.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
Is that what he's saying?
Say it again one more time. I'm sorry.
Is he saying that that's what Yosef did? He was that's rubbing it in their face?
Well, again, you're asking an interesting question. So you want to know why did Yosef do it this way?
No, I want to know if they're saying that that is what he did. He was rubbing it in their face.
No, I think, again, this is Berzon, this is not Rabbeinu Simcha, but I think what he's saying is that Yosef was just taken by this dream. You know, it was...
What?
He was taken by it. He was uplifted by it. He was exhilarated by the dream.
Yeah.
What maybe is the implicit criticism is that he shouldn't have conveyed that to the brothers in this context.
It was just a
keep
natural
that for yourself.
Thing, you know?
But it was a natural thing.
And he didn't think it was going to make them hate him.
Right.
And Rashi does say, actually, something else. Rashi said, about Varav, and Chet, and Apostle Chet, about Varav, I'll...
Dibatam ra'a. That goes back
what
to.
Dibatam mean?
Wait, just one second. First, let's see the word. I want you to go back to Pasuk Beis. Do you have Pasuk Beis?
Yes.
The end of Pasuk Beis. It says, Vayaveh Yosef et dibatam ra'a.
What does dibatam mean?
Dibatam is what we call Lashon Hara. Dibara. It's they said about him. You know, he Yosef snitched and he told the
father. But one time he just speech.
Speech raw up. You have to read it as one hyphenated phrase. You know, bad, evil speech. You know, they're guilty. He thinks that they ate from Eivor Menachai.
You think there should be erased there in that word, divatam or something. But
divatam means diba shelahem.
I'm just saying you would think there should be erased in the word divatam.
I don't think so. You can analyze the grammatics, okay. the grammar. Right, so but again, this is very difficult because according to Rashi, why is this pasuk appear after the first dream?
Right.
This should have been back in pasuk Beis.
Right.
What's it doing here? The answer is, it's the way he told him the chalom. He was so exhilarated about the chalom. This was going to be a glorious chapter at the end of time, when the children, the descendants of Yosef, will rise up. And we have a whole haftorah about this, that Esav will be Kash, and Yosef will be Lahava. Yosef and his children will be the fire. This is what, if you've ever heard the concept of Shiach ben Yosef, yes. I mean, this is all written in this chalom, in this dream. So Yosef is really uplifted by this dream, because he is ultimately going to defeat Yosef. I'm sorry, he is ultimately going to defeat Esav, uh-huh. meaning the Tzetzaim, the descendants of Esav, that are going to rise up against us. And that's exhilarating. That's an eschatological view.
He should have toned it down when he spoke to
the Yeah. Person. He lacked in sense.
He's only 17. I mean, you have a 17-year-old kid.
He was excited.
Right, but you have a 17-year-old kid. Is going to just blurt out like that without thinking.
So, you should know, Murray, your approach, if you take a look in footnote number 7, your approach is that of the Sfarno. The Sfarno says that the Torah, back in Pasuk... Where was it? Vuhunar. Where is that? I don't want to lose. Oh, here it is. Pasuk Beis. You see the words Vuhunar in Pasuk Beis?
Yes.
So the Sfarno, who came many centuries before Rabbi Simcha, he builds mountains on this phrase Vuhunar.
Uh-huh.
And basically his commentary, and you'll see it summarized here in number 7, in footnote number 7, is that he was like a nar. He was acting out of childishness. That's not Rabbi Simcha's approach. Rabbi Simcha says that Yosef had a definite plan. He had an agenda. His goal was to make the brothers do tshuva.
But his enthusiasm in the words... the kind of immature thing that
was a mistake. Whereas the Sfarno went very far, and he says the whole deal here, this whole parasha about Yosef telling the dreams, was all because of na'arut, was immaturity and childishness on the part of Yosef. Rabbi Simcha is not willing to accept that. Rabbi Simcha understands that Yosef, at the age of 17, is ready for the greatest challenges that a human being could face, which is going to come up in the pipeline when he gets sold as an Eved. And he did very well. So Rabbi Simcha was jolted by the approach of the Sfarno here. And he said, no, this is the wisdom of Yosef. He's figuring out how he can get the brothers to do tshuva, shimunah, which is a classic language of a Navi who's called upon by the Almighty to get the people of Israel to do tshuva. He saw that his first dream was not successful. He tried to do tshuva, to do tochacha. Sometimes he tried to do tochacha and it just doesn't work because the sin is a little bit too ingrained. He had a second attempt and a second dream by introducing Yaakov into the equation was successful to some extent, and they dropped and terminated their sin, and then it became kinah. But in the broader picture, he made one mistake. In the first dream, again, we don't see this in the second dream, in the first dream, and that is the word vehine that appears once, twice, and thrice. He overstepped his bounds. He should have been more sensitive, knowing full well that they harbored such enmity to him, not to say this besimcha. Wow, look how great it is that my descendants will, at the end of time, bring about the destruction of Esau.